Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday. What a pleasure to have you in live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Jerome Bettis, haven't talked to him in years, will stop by today. Tom Verducci, World Series begins tonight. My buddy Peter Schrager, Mark Sanchez, we're loaded today. 1 hour from now, the Herd hierarchy. What the heck do we do with the Bengals? What do we do with the Raiders? Those were my last place teams. What do I do with them?
Tennessee.
Tennessee's always been, you know, I didn't think they'd be great this year, but they're always like a dilemma for me. What are they too Derrick Henry dependent? So it is great to have everybody in today. So I before we get to this, I'm going to do this in about 10 minutes. I talked to Tom Brady yesterday. Jim Gray, who's been a sportscaster of some renown for a long time, put 12 of us on a panel, or not a panel, just a Zoom call yesterday to ask Tom Brady a question. And so I thought about it all weekend, and I told you what the question was, and you'll hear what the question is in 10 minutes, but I asked him, Tom gave the longest, most thoughtful answer to any question I've ever asked a pro athlete. No surprise, the GOAT. He gave a 4-minute and 50-minute answer. It was so well thought out. It was, you know, it was classic Tom Brady, conscientious, and, you know, thanked him, but it was like, wow. So I'm going to play that for you, the answer. And I'm only going to play a minute of it. I could almost just give it a segment because it was so interesting. Not the question, but the answer was so interesting. So we'll get to that. I want to start with this, though. I can think two things at the same time. I know you can't on Twitter, but you can in real life. I can think Pete Carroll has been great for the Seattle Seahawks, and I can simultaneously think, hey, maybe it's time to go. And when he got to Seattle, and the reputation for Pete has always been he burns white hot, and then he kind of burns people out. Did that in New England. Did that in USC. And I think he's doing it in Seattle. His first year with the Seahawks in 2010, pre-Russell Wilson, I looked it up this morning, they were blown out 9 times. The next year, they were blown out 4 times, but their losses were more competitive, but they still had a losing record. And he'd been fired twice before that in the NFL. But Pete, as he's won a Super Bowl, and this happened to Belichick in New England, Pete got more power. And then when Paul Allen, the late, great Paul Allen, passed away, Pete got ultimate power. And I don't like my coaches to have too much power. I love Belichick. Stay away from the draft. Pete Carroll's great. Stay away from the draft. let the GM do that. But it's interesting. Belichick, post-Tom Brady, he's starting to kind of percolate here. Sean Payton post Drew Brees. Well, they're 4-2. Mike Tomlin, as Big Ben has aged or been hurt, never had a losing season. Pete Carroll, he's never won in the NFL without Russell Wilson. Doesn't mean he can't coach. Doesn't mean he wasn't great for USC. Doesn't mean he won't go to Canton. I like Pete. But I've been asking this for 3 years now as Pete's gotten more and more power. What does Seattle do well that's not directly connected to Russell Wilson? The last 5 first-round draft picks, no Pro Bowlers, no hits, 2 busts. The last 4 drafts total, Pete's had huge influence, 2 hits. In the last 4 drafts total, DK Metcalf and a punter. My people in the industry that I've known for years, that I've used as sources, always say the same thing. Seattle's weird. Their drafts are weird. Why? Because the coach has too much power. And I like Pete. But you've watched the last 2 weeks without Russell Wilson. It's unwatchable. You've watched the last 3 weeks without Russell Wilson playing a full game. It's unwatchable. 12 years is a long time to be in one place. And it doesn't mean he is not a legend. But when they made that move for Jamal Adams, that was Pete Carroll. 2 firsts, a third, and a player for a safety, a box safety. That was a Hail Mary. That was a Legion of Boom Hail Mary. It was trying to throw money at a lot of mistakes. And that's a bad sign for any business. And I'll tell you this right now, and I believe it. Russell Wilson will not be in Seattle in 2 years if Pete's there. I think he's worn out. He's exhausted. And I can think two things simultaneously. I can think Pete's great. Pete's been amazing. Pete's a legend. Pete should go to Canton. Pete is all that. And maybe it's time. Or he stays and he gets out of the personnel department. Because they don't draft well anymore. They don't. Now, to Pete's credit, after they lost again last night, to Pete's credit, he acknowledges how valuable that Russell Wilson has been to him and the franchise.
I've been here a long time, and if we didn't have Russell, I probably wouldn't have been here a long time. Because think of all the magic that he's created in the years. He's got numbers and stats in fourth quarter, this is and that's and all that stuff. You know, one of the winningest quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. And it'll be really fun when he comes back and plays football again for us this year.
So he doesn't lack self-awareness. He doesn't lack self-awareness. Pete's smart. He knows more football than I ever will. But his career, you know, after you've had three or four or five jobs, there is a trend. There is something we can follow. With the Patriots, with USC, with the Seahawks, great energy. Burns hot. Players buy in. Players love his mantras, his enthusiasm, his energy. Wears gum out. And you know, there are some things he does very well. I've had multiple Seahawk players tell me that Pete Carroll meetings are brilliant. They're Belichickian. They're as good as anybody in the league. Like Andy Reid, Belichick, Pete Carroll, their team meetings are like buttoned down, a science, the envy of the industry. College or pro, he's one of the five best meeting coaches in the world. Like just, he's been doing it a long time. He's good at it. But I'm looking at this team more and more. And it's funny about guys. And I think about this all the time. We all want power. And it's often the end of us. Belichick, after about four Super Bowls, he had all the power. He was a football god. And they gave him all the power. And their drafts went into the tank. Because you can't be a GM and a coach simultaneously. Pete Carroll got the Seahawks their first Super Bowl. Should have had two. Pete got more power. Paul Allen passes away. Look at their drafts. The more power Pete gets, the worse it gets. Now, Andy Reid doesn't have that power. Andy Reid keeps winning games. You know, and by the way, Sean Payton, they got a real Mickey Loomis, a real GM. They got a great cap guy. They got Jeff Ireland's one of the best personnel people. Guys tend to want power, then you give it to them, and it's the end of them. And the only way to me you keep Pete around is if Pete gets out of personnel, does what he does great, coaches his butt off, lets Russ run the offense, because right now, nothing this team does that's not connected to Russell Wilson is done well. All right, so this is really interesting to me. The Tom Brady bit will be in about 5 minutes. So the Packers put Devontae Adams this Thursday in what we are calling the greatest Thursday night NFL game in the history of the world. The Packers go to Arizona to play the Cardinals. It's going to be a great game, right? Even though I think Arizona is going to whack them now. And the reason I think that is Devontae Adams, a tremendous wide receiver, friend of our show, he's on the COVID-19 list, so he won't play. He won't travel. We don't know. Physically, he could be just fine, but he's on the list. And what was fascinating, and I've always said this, don't listen to the media, don't listen to fans. Fans are too emotional. Media's got agendas. Listen to Vegas. It's all about the money. They don't care about anything other than the lettuce. So the line for this game was 3.5. And that's about right. Arizona's favored. They're at home. You know, a home crowd is worth about 3 points. So what they're saying is Green Bay and Arizona neutral field, yeah, it'd be an even game. If it was in Green Bay, they'd be favored by 3. If it's in Arizona, they're favored by 3, 3.5. The minute Devontae Adams went on the COVID list, won't play, the line went to like 6. What? That's more than the Cleveland Brown line changed when Baker Mayfield couldn't play and Case Keenum did. And Baker won a playoff game. Baker's a quarterback. Baker's a friend. This is not a shot at Baker. He's a quarterback. He touches the ball 70 times a game. Vegas, I mean, Baker's a capable quarterback, right? He won a playoff game last year. The line moved more for a wide receiver not playing. Now, does that mean Devontae Adams is more valuable than a franchise quarterback? No, it doesn't. And I love Devontae, and I think he's arguably the best receiver, he and DeAndre Hopkins in the league. And some of the line is he's great. But what that line is telling you is this team is way too dependent on Devontae Adams. They have a really good back and a productive tight end, but this is their most average offensive line probably in Aaron Rodgers' career. The defense is good, but not special. So when that line moved more for a wide receiver not playing than a team, Cleveland losing a franchise quarterback, that's not just about Devontae Adams. That is about the real dilemma for the Packers. Do they have a second receiver they can trust in a big spot? And Vegas thinks, no. Now they're almost a touchdown underdog. Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, almost a touchdown underdog. So can't wait to watch it. My guess is I like Arizona to win comfortably because this has been my concern. And I think this is not like a revelation. I think you have the same concern as you take Devontae. There are a twisted ankle of Devontae Adams from not being close to a Super Bowl team, just being good. With Aaron Rodgers, they're always good. All right. The question I asked Tom Brady yesterday and his really thoughtful, smart answer. I just kind of blown away with it. Almost 4 minutes and 50 seconds. I'll play a minute of it. I wish I could play more of it. Maybe later in the show.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Faherty, founded by twin brothers. Family business, make the best looking clothes. Lifetime guarantee of quality. Super comfortable. By the way, I'm wearing their pants right now. Faherty's offering 20% off with the code HERD. FahertyBrand.com/HERD. FahertyBrand.com/HERD. So I got a call, a text on Thursday or Friday of last week. Jim Gray, who I've known for a long time, great sports reporter, said, hey, Tom Brady, he has a podcast called Let's Go. It's on Sirius XM, and you should listen to it. And he does. I've heard it before. I've driven around, and I hear it. And he said, listen, there's going to be about 12, 15 of you on it. You all get one question. So that you can come on, but yeah, one question. And it was really a cool group of people. Scott Van Pelt was on it. We'd known Scotty for a long time. Chris Berman, Steve Young, you know, some reporters, Jim Nantz, blah, blah, blah. And I was very honored to be even, you know, included in that, right? So Dan Patrick was on it. And so I was on it. And over the weekend, I thought, okay, you got one question. So I never do this. I wrote the question down because I didn't want to screw it up. I thought, I want to ask something that will elicit a really good response. And, you know, everybody, well, I was almost one of the last ones they went to. And that's the way it should have been because I'm, you're just a guy. And he's talking to Steve Young and stuff. So at the end, I got there and I asked him a question. And my question was, Tom, you've had this great career. It's remarkable. And at the end of it, if the owners or a commissioner said, you know, Tom, you really always had, you had a great career. You were so good for us. We're going to allow you one radical change in the NFL. You will be able to do one change. It could be a rule. It could be a CBA. It could be anything. But, Tom, you get to make one structural change to the game that you love, but there's currently something you don't love. What would it be? And Tom gave a five-minute answer, and here's a clip of it.
I think that what's happened over the last 10, 15 years. And I think in the, it's a great question because the game that I played 20 years ago is very different than the game now in the sense that now it's more skills competition than it is physical football. I think in some ways they're taking away a physical element to the game. That was the only way at one point to beat skill was to be tough. And when we played the Pittsburgh Steelers, they were tough. And when we played the teams that were just skillful, we won. And I think what's happening now is the way the rules are being set, I don't think that it's always in the best interests of the game that I once played. I feel like rules are being made. For example, the onus of protecting another player is now on the opponent as opposed to on yourself. So, for example, I threw a touchdown pass. The 600 touchdown pass I ever threw in my career was to Mike Evans yesterday. 10 years ago, I never would have thrown that football because Mike had caught the ball. The safety was standing right there, and the safety essentially can't hit him the way that he used to be able to hit him because all the safeties now are 200 pounds, and they all cover. There's a lot of players like Ray Lewis that I didn't throw the ball between the hashes because Ray Lewis was going to knock him out of the game, not because, you know, he was going to, you know, make a tackle. And I think the onus of protecting receivers is on, should be on the quarterback, not on the defensive backs. And the onus of protecting a running back should be on the offensive linemen, not on the tacklers who are trying to tackle the running back. So I don't believe in cheap shots, and I don't think cheap shots should ever be allowed. But if you are a professional athlete, it'd be like being in a boxing ring and saying, don't hit your opponent too hard because you might hurt him.
He went on for another 4 minutes on this and gave multiple examples, really fascinating. So first of all, I just, it was classic Tom Brady, conscientious, smart. He'd given this a ton of thought, and he went on, and all of it was interesting. I was getting texts by other people on the panel like, wow, this is interesting, and how he sees the world. The second thing is, one of the reasons everybody loves Derrick Henry, he's obviously a great running back, but he adds a physicality to the game. And I remember years and years ago, like 20 years ago, people say, oh, you got to watch Canadian football. And I was younger, like 25 years old. I'm in Vegas, and, you know, Vegas would have everything. You go to a sports book, there were 30 games on. They had mud bog races. They had everything on. And they had Canadian football on. And I had a friend named Randy. He was Canadian. He was like, oh, Canadian football. And I was like, well, they never run. It's just all passing. Like, I like the physicality of football. I like Troy Polamalu. I like Ray Lewis. I like those guys. And you don't get a lot of it. And I thought Tom was interesting when he said, it's now a skills competition. Now, we know why the league is doing this. And this has been discussed. Roger Goodell, I just read a story not long ago, like Roger's biggest fear, Roger Goodell, the commissioner's biggest fear, because the league's on, it's just crushing. If somebody dies, somebody gets hurt. Like seriously, it's his biggest fear. And it's the biggest fear for the business. And so I get it. They have made the game much safer. I'm for it. They have made the game over the middle much friendlier. I'm for it. I think the concerns for concussions are real. And I think the league's done a really good job. Practice is easier. The rules are better. It's never been safer, but athletes are getting bigger, faster, and stronger. And the collisions are sometimes, you know, Patrick Mahomes got hit this weekend, and I was just wincing. I'm like, I'm not going to watch the replay. No thanks. So I thought, the Let's Go podcast, SiriusXM, Jim Gray Brady, very thoughtful. There's a reason why it's happening. But and by the way, Brady is saying this as he benefits from it. This isn't a guy complaining like, hey, I get hit all the time. Brady's benefiting from this. Very rarely does somebody in any industry criticize something they benefit from. I mean, everybody, you go to social media, everybody loves what benefits them. Oh, I love this commentator. He sees the world politically just like I do. No, you conservatives watch MSNBC. You liberals watch Fox. Let's see how it works for you there. Brady's like, yeah, I benefit greatly from this. And I don't think it's good for the game. So whether it is or not, it was really thoughtful. Made me think. Hopefully it makes you think. Enjoy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
You know, I hadn't thought of it that way. And maybe that is why I like Derrick Henry so much.
There's a toughness element to it.
Yeah. I mean, we're both old school people.
Yeah.
With a modern flair.
Yeah. You have that, yeah.
Well, I think we are both people who like to evolve.
Right.
Not individuals that like to stay the same. And, you know.
We have a romantic side of, we like old stuff.
Right.
And older music and movies. There is a romance to my childhood and your childhood.
Yeah. And I'm not against the way that the game is played now.
Right.
But I do think that he makes an interesting point. Now, how do you fix that? I don't necessarily know. Because how do you reinsert? A lot of the problems with the physicality in the NFL, and aside from obviously the injuries, which hurts the game right. A lot. And hurts the money a lot.
Yeah.
Is that how you develop the defensive side of the ball from a young age. Yeah. Like how you learn how to tackle has to start when you're young. So that's what defensive players are learning now from their coaches when they're in high school and then to college and then in the pros. So changing something in the pros changes everything. It trickles down.
Well, to me, that's why I don't like a 17th game. That's why I don't like the preseason. So my theory's always been this on football. It used to be you had kids hitting each other from 8 years old until they retired at 38.
Yeah.
That's a 30-year window of regulated violence. If you get hitting out, Matt Leinart's got this like this this league in Orange County, I think it is, where it's like flag football. Like,
yeah, both my nephews play flag football. My brother plays flag football.
I love that. I love it. And so if the window went from 30 years to 15, and there's two ways to make it happen. You don't hit until high school.
Yeah.
And then if you give more guaranteed money to players, they retire at 32 or 29. They don't have to play till 38 unless they're like a kicker or Tom Brady. Yeah. There are positions you get hit less. So the window from getting hit goes from 30 years to 15, and then you don't get neurological issues. And I, by the way, I think you're seeing this. We have seen players, you know, in the trenches. DeBrickashaw Ferguson, there was a linebacker, Chris Borland, I think his name was, for San Francisco. They're like, hey, I made my money. I loved it. I made a Pro Bowler five. I'm out.
Yeah.
So, but I do think innately the sport, there's a physicality that you need to have. Because intimidation is part of UFC, it's part of hockey, it's part any sport that's got a regulated level of some violence, intimidation's a factor, and well, it's a good factor.
This is also a conversation that we have all the time about the NBA. So old school guys are like, it was better when it was physical, and we're like, well, it's more of a skill. It's a contact sport, but it's not a collision sport. So
right.
The finesse of it and the skill of it is okay to have, but it does change the game. Like, there are certain players who would not thrive in today's game that played 20, 30 years ago.
I mean, people forget, young people wouldn't know this. You used to be able to hand check people. Like, Jordan could just move you around like a dish on a table. You couldn't, because Michael was so strong. Gary Payton, you just basically, a guy couldn't. Now, guards, you cannot stay in front of Ja Morant.
Right.
You can't stay in front of him. It's impossible.
So Deshaun Watson, who has a no-trade clause in his contract, is reportedly willing to consider multiple options for a new team ahead of the trade deadline. The Dolphins are still a strong contender to land Watson in a trade, but he will consider potential options as they come because his primary goal is to get out of Houston. This is according to sources. The Texans also want to maximize Watson's trade value with prospective teams. So an emerging option is the Carolina Panthers. And there is growing expectation that that conversation could happen. The Panthers traded second, fourth, and sixth round picks to the Jets this past April for Sam Darnold, who's obviously been struggling and was benched this week. But Matt Rhule said he is going to be the starter moving forward. And one league source says that the belief is that the Dolphins don't want to bid against themselves for Watson.
That's right.
And the Broncos have been considered an option as well, though they haven't made a major move at this point, according to sources. So the trade deadline is 1 week from today.
That's right.
Tuesday, November 2nd.
My gut feeling is we will get a deal done, but I think that's really smart that Miami's like, is there a market? We don't want to. Because, by the way, if you were Houston, you're way better off leaking all the rumors. Because Houston can create a market that may not exist.
Yeah, this story for the past week or so, whenever all of those reports happened that Miami and there was a deal that was imminent, that was all coming from Houston. Now, not that it wasn't legitimate, because we know that this is a legitimate conversation the Dolphins have been having, or wouldn't have been in the news for as long and consistently as it is. We know that.
Yeah.
But obviously Houston wants to move him. He's not playing for Houston right now because he wants to be traded, and he has a no trade clause. So there are a lot of moving parts to making this trade happen, because the Texans can do all this work and put together this amazing trade that benefits the Texans.
Right.
But if Deshaun doesn't want to go there, he can just say, I'm not going there. And then that's done. All that work is done. And now you've lost someone else who was in the mix. So we're going to obviously get news either way within a week. But again, we don't know if he's going to even be available to play once that trade is made. So 49ers coach Kyle Shanahan said that despite him having his worst game ever on Sunday, Jimmy Garoppolo is still the starter.
We didn't go into that game thinking that Jimmy was one bad game away from losing his job or anything like that. I definitely thought he could have played better, but that was not a game to where, hey, if Jimmy has one bad game, he's losing his job. We know Trey's a future here and trying to do what's best for him and for our team.
Such a weird situation.
Listen,
Trey Lance is injured, so it's not like, who are you benching Jimmy Garoppolo for?
They're 4-4 right now. They're not as dynamic as Arizona. They're not as good as the Rams. And when Russ Wilson comes back, I would take them over the Niners if they played. So I know it's early and I don't want to be overly dramatic, but it does kind of feel like they're just in a bad space and it's not going to get better. That's what it feels like.
Trey Lance. I agree. Trey Lance is supposed to be at practice today. He injured his knee in his first start in the week 5 loss to the Cardinals that Garoppolo missed. So I don't really know what the conversation is to go to Trey because he's been injured. So even if Garoppolo was playing terrible as he did or great, doesn't matter. Trey Lance isn't available to move on to him anyway. Now they face the Bears on Sunday and they're currently 3-point favorites according to Fox Bet. But I don't know what to make of the Niners right now. Going into the season, it made a lot of sense that Jimmy was the starter. Trey Lance was very raw and they have a had a great roster, but they've also been dealing with a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. And predictably, Jimmy Garoppolo has been dealing with an injury as well. So, speaking of Chicago, Justin Fields is separating himself from the pack in one statistical category that he does not want to be in. He has been sacked 22 times,
most
by any quarterback this season, despite only starting five games. He ranks 31st in NFL pass attempts, in the NFL in pass attempts with 131. He's been sacked on 14.4% of dropbacks this season. No other starting quarterback is at even 10%. So Matt Nagy said Fields needs to work on getting rid of the ball quicker. His biggest criticism is that he relies on his legs too much. The Bears' offensive line ranks 16th in pass blocking and 20th in run blocking.
Yeah, I can't believe it's that high.
I can't either. Now, I would be interested to hear from someone who, maybe like Greg Cosell, or someone who really watches the tape to see if that criticism from Matt Nagy is accurate or if the Bears' offensive line is just that terrible. Now, it may be a mixture of the two. He is a young quarterback, and he is athletic, so he is going to rely on his legs. The fear is obviously that you're taking too many hits, and that's obviously way too many sacks to be taking. But they play the Niners this Sunday. I don't get crazy about rookie quarterbacks. The Bears are kind of in a different situation than, say, Jacksonville or the Jets, where they're not in a complete and total rebuild and they don't have a new head coach. So they're in this kind of middle space and their defense is put together. So it's kind of hard to evaluate what you should be expecting from Justin Fields, because we really should be comparing him to the other guys in his class. But I think the offensive line probably needs to give him a little help.
Yeah. Enjoy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live
NFL
news.
Guy for Fox. We love him. Peter Schrager joining me now. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz. The best or nothing. All right, so you watched Seattle last night. I said I can think two things. Pete's a great coach, and it's 12 years, and they need a new voice. I think he's had increasing power and personnel, and I think they've whiffed on a ton of picks the last 4 years. Last four drafts, they have two home runs, a punter and DK Metcalf. What do you do with this offense, even if Russell comes back, Schrags? What do your people say? What could you do to elevate this stuff?
Got to tighten things up. See, Russell was the great deodorant for this team. He made up for a lot of mistakes, and last night it was evident what was going on here. Rushing game was non-evident. Couldn't see anything there. But here's also what hurt them. They missed two chippy field goals because they never invested a kicker. They had a terrible late hit by Marquise Blair on defense that was a roughing the passer penalty, and unnecessary roughness when it was 3rd and 9. And then they have a 350-pound defensive lineman in a key field goal attempt for the Saints. This guy goes off sides on 4th and 5. It gives the Saints the ball back, and now there's four more down. Like, you can't do all that with Geno Smith at quarterback. They have lost on their last possession the last 3 weeks. The interception to Lockett when he was intended for Lockett. Last week when he fumbles the ball in the strip sack by Watt. And then last night, they just had nothing going when it was, you know, okay, here we go. We need it, Geno. 2-minute drill. Let's go. He gets sacked twice. That's what Russell Wilson brings. And I'm not sure they're good enough to just say, okay, well, when Russell comes back, we're going to be in this thing. When the defense plays well, the offense doesn't. When the offense plays well, the defense can't stop anything. Colin, you know Seattle well. They haven't won a game at home yet this season. Yeah. That's a problem.
Yeah. 49ers, what to do? What is their biggest issue right now? Is it the obvious quarterback in Garoppolo?
Yeah, he has been terrible. And I know Kyle Shanahan said that, hey, you know, I don't think he was that bad. Sunday night was the nadir for Jimmy Garoppolo. And you start to think, what is it? Is it just he's not as crisp as he used to be? Is he coming off the injury? Or is there something psychologically like, hey, this is a lame duck year. We already drafted your replacement. How are you going to do? But Wentz outplayed him inside and out on Sunday. And now I listen to a lot of the people around the league, but I also listen to a lot of the fans around the league. Being on that Good Morning Football show, we get tweets and texts all the time from viewers. And it's like, okay, Mac Jones was the 15th overall pick. We traded up from 12 to 3 and gave up next year's first round pick and the year after's first round pick to get Trey Lance, who, although injured, probably isn't ready to take us to the Super Bowl this year anyway. There are a lot of questions right now about this roster because Josh Norman and Dre Kirkpatrick are the number one wide receivers. Brandon Ayuk, first round pick last year, he can't seem to get on the field or do much when he is. And now the quarterback situation, hey, we traded all this draft capital for the next 2 years and we traded up. Mac Jones looks pretty good up there in New England. They sat pretty at 15. What are we getting from Trey or Jimmy right now that's helping us win games? Their four-game losing streak has gotten worse and worse and worse. And for the first time in years, Colin, it's kind of like, wait a second, what is this team? Since the Super Bowl, last year we said it was all injuries. What's the excuse this year?
No, it's a really, really good point. The losses have gotten worse. I mean, I'm interviewing Zach Taylor, the coach of the Bengals, and I'm excited to because I don't know much about him other than his resume. And what is the secret sauce to Cincinnati? I mean, we know Burrow's playing very well. What's the sauce here?
Yeah, they're really confident, but they're not surprised by what's happening, which I think we're all like, what a cool feel-good story, the Bengals. I talked to people in that organization before the season started. They saw themselves as good as they are right now. They saw Burrow having this incredible leap. They saw the defense stepping up. And it's fair to be a skeptic in August because they haven't been good. And the free agent signings were like Chidobe Awuzie, who was kind of discarded by the Cowboys, and Trey Hendrickson, who had a nice 1 year with the Saints. But between those guys on defense and then the draft selections of both Ja'Marr Chase and Carmen, the offensive lineman, who had an amazing block on that mix and run, it's all coming together and it's led by Burrow. So you're going to enjoy Zach Taylor. He is a smart coach. He is a good coach, but he is not shocked by what's happening. And I think the people in that organization from the top to bottom kind of were expecting a good year. Maybe they're pleasantly surprised with 5-2, but they did not think they were a bottom of the barrel team this year. They thought they'd compete, and they are.
By the way, there's data out there I saw last week. I took them to give the Bengals, the Ravens issues because their run defense analytically is like fantastic. Great. It really is. So there's data out there that they're we think of them as this high flying offense, but they're hard to run against. Now, Deshaun Watson. Joy just brought this up. Miami doesn't want to negotiate against themselves. And I thought about, boy, if I was the GM, if I was Greer for Miami and I read all these teams, I think I'd call one of the teams and say, are you guys really in on it? Because you don't want to negotiate against yourself. What are you hearing? A week from today is the deadline, Schrags, on Deshaun Watson. What's the latest?
Let me lay it out for you how I hear it from around the league. All right. He has not been suspended. He has not been put on the commissioner's exempt list. If he was traded today, he could start Sunday for the Miami Dolphins, the Carolina Panthers, the Denver Broncos, you name it. The question is, which team has the appetite to take the situation on? And is it worth taking this situation on? If you see yourselves as being all in on Deshaun Watson, that means you've done the work. You've worked with legal teams. You've already done your investigations on your own independently. You've spoken to his lawyer, Rusty Hardin. You've spoken to the other lawyers. You feel confident. This offseason, though, Colin, there might be Russell Wilson available. There might be Aaron Rodgers available. There might be Jimmy Garoppolo available. Are you willing to give up several years' worth of draft picks, several years' worth into the future, for this unknown? Someone who makes this trade really has to have A, confidence in the work that they've done individually, and B, an appetite for whatever might come out of this. But as of right now, Colin, if he was traded, he could start on Sunday, and the NFL wouldn't stop it because they haven't suspended him or put him on the exempt list.
Wow. There's a lot going on there, a lot to unpack. Schrags, as always, by the way, has a cheat sheet on the Fox Sports app, insider information, what teams to watch, pop culture. It's good as always. He's on Fox NFL Kickoff Sunday. I got booted off that show mostly. And Schrager took my place because he's amazing. Yeah. It's great seeing you, buddy.
Colin, I wasn't invited into the Brady comp, maybe because I don't kiss his hiney. You guys talk about Brady. I'm a Patrick Mahomes guy, all right? I don't kiss Brady's butt.
All right.
Brady, get out of here.
I kind of do. All right, Schrags, good seeing you. Brady is so nice, by the way, so patient. He's a very patient guy. Michael Irvin's a great player. He said something yesterday, it was nonsense, and I'm going to respectfully push back on what Michael Irvin said, the Hall of Famer, who's always outrageously funny.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Braves Astros World Series Game 1 tonight. Discover Card Key Matchup. Match all the cash back you earn on your credit card end of the first year automatically with no limits. Go to discover.com/yes. So Michael Irvin, the playmaker, is very funny. He's on the NFL Network, and he said yesterday, nobody is scared of Kansas City and the Chiefs anymore. Nobody. And I'd like to respectfully disagree completely. Mike Tyson was 8 years past his prime. You didn't want to mess with him. And even the fighters who fought him, because of that left hook, would stay out of harm's way. You had to have a respectful level of fear for Mike Tyson, who had the nastiest knockout punch ever. It's not the best fighter ever. It's not the best heavyweight ever. He had the best punch ever, a left hook. It was wild. It didn't land often, but when it did, it knocked out men at 265 pounds that were much bigger. Knocked them out into Tuesday. So Kansas City, for anybody that thinks they're done, just think about this. They're favored by 10 points over the Giants this weekend. Now, 10 points is a lot in the NFL. I'll tell you how much 10 points is. The Jets, with a backup quarterback who are awful, facing the number one seeded Cincinnati Bengals, are also a 10-point underdog. The Giants just won. They've won games this year. They played well last weekend. They're a 10-point dog to Kansas City. Now, Kansas City's not playing well. They still have the eighth best odds, however, to win the Super Bowl, and they, like Tyson, have the best knockout punch. Andy Reid's too smart, Patrick Mahomes too gifted and self-aware, they'll be back. Now, fixed does not mean the Super Bowl. I don't think they're a Super Bowl team this year. I like Buffalo going into the season anyway out of the AFC. Fixed means 11-6, 10-7, and I think they'll get it right. Jeff Schwartz, his brother Mitchell, used to play for the Chiefs, talked about their issues yesterday on our show.
Well, Mahomes is trying to do too much, and I think he's trying to do too much because he feels the pressure from the defense, because the defense is not really stopping anyone, and he's trying to do too much, and it's compounding errors upon errors. Poor drafting. He has covered up a lot of the problems the Chiefs have had. But the problem is when he doesn't cover them up anymore, everything gets exacerbated. I think people writing off the Chiefs are pretty silly, guys. Like, are you telling me that come January, if the Chiefs are the 6 or 7 seed, you're going to feel comfortable with your favorite team playing Kansas City? Like, you're not, okay? So they'll be fine. They'll figure it out. They got the Giants Monday Night Football recovery game. They'll be 4-4. They'll be okay, guys.
By the way, every good team in the AFC has a flaw. The Bills, offensive line, run game, pretty average. Bengals, offensive line worries you. Bills don't run the ball particularly well. Baltimore's pass defense, kind of a wreck. I would say New England, they're emerging. They got a rookie quarterback with kind of a low ceiling athletically. Raiders have an interim head coach. Kansas City, bad defensively, too many turnovers. So, you know, I mean, the Chargers I like, but the middle of their defense you can run on. They got a rookie head coach. So everybody has got sort of an issue in the AFC, and I think Kansas City's issue is not entirely fixable because a lot of it is personnel. But if you have a left hook, you're always feared in boxing. If you have those weapons and that coach and that quarterback, and you're always feared. By the way, Joy just said this during the break. So yesterday a story came out. And so let me give you some, I'll make this as delicate as I can. A lot of times a story will come out and it'll be on another show with another host, or it'll be a reporter break it. And I'm not going to badmouth the host or badmouth the reporter, but I don't believe the story. People say a lot of things. So yesterday, Mike Tomlin is coming out and he's a candidate for the USC job. So I called USC's athletic director the second I got off the show, and I'm not going to divulge anything there. But I will tell you, I didn't really buy into it. I think he'd be great. I think he'd be amazing. I think it's fun to talk about. It's good for shows like mine. But let me ask you, why would the Rooneys let him go? There's like 8 good coaches in the NFL. He's one of them. Why in the world would you let Mike Tomlin go? You know, if USC came and made an offer, I'd be like, all right, go ahead. You guys understand they're going through a transition? They probably never needed Mike Tomlin more than now. You know, 7 years ago, there were probably a lot of coaches that could have won games in Pittsburgh because Big Ben was in his prime. And right now, there are not a lot of coaches. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, and that includes the Duck Hodges year. So he's never been more needed in Pittsburgh than now. Now, I think it's a fun topic. It's interesting. Mike Silver came on yesterday. It's fun. But today, Mike Tomlin was asked about the USC job. Mike Tomlin was asked about it. I'm going to read you a direct quote. "That's a joke for me," said Tomlin. "I got one of the best jobs in pro sports. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? Never say never, but never." He also said, "There's not a check big enough from a booster at USC to get me that job. Yeah, listen, pro jobs are better than college jobs. They just are. It's a better brand of football. You're dealing with men, not kids. You don't have to deal with the NCAA. You don't have to deal with high maintenance, needy boosters. You don't have to deal with the, you know, the weekly luncheon with the, you know, sign this and sign that. College football can be a drag. I mean, Nick Saban would not be in college football if he got Drew Brees in Miami. He would have never coached college football. He did it. LSU, Michigan State, he'd have stayed in the NFL. So NFL's a better job than college football. It's a better job. The pensions are better. No NCAA, no boosters. You just don't bail on like the Steelers. Y'all get that, right? Jags, maybe you bail someday. You don't bail on the Rooney family. It's a good roster. They just need a younger quarterback. Hour two next.